You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
During the season of Lent, which is just the 40 days leading up to Easter, we've been each week looking at one of the statements that Jesus makes about himself in the Gospel of John. There are these seven statements that begin with, I am. They're claims of deity. They reveal to us what he's like and what the Father is like. And so we've looked at him saying, I'm the bread of life, and I'm the light of the world, and the way, and the truth, and the life, and so on. Today, as you just heard read in John 10, we come to his statement where he says, I am the door of the sheep. And we're going to see that this is a statement about leadership. It's a critique on the current leadership of his day, and it's an invitation to follow him. As you know, leadership is a huge topic in our culture. It's front and center in politics all the time on the news. But it's not just politics. It's the marketplace, education, family, church. All of the talk and all of those spheres is about leadership. And probably for good reason. You know from experience how much of a difference a good leader can make. Everyone around them is lifted up. They're motivated and fruitful. And unfortunately, you know from experience how much damage bad leaders can do. They breed insecurity and division. It's the kind of thing, our experiences with bad leaders, it's the kind of thing that makes us skeptical about leadership and authority in general. I'd say our culture is pervasively skeptical about authority. However, that is a really hard place to be. And the reason is because I think we were made to follow. We want to follow good leaders. I think the human soul is wired, hungry to follow. Even leaders want someone to follow. Another way of saying this would just be to say that we are not meant to be gods. We're not made to run the universe. We're not even made to run our own lives. We're made as dependent beings who flourish under God's leadership. Everywhere we turn in our culture, we're being told, you're in charge of your life. You call the shots. I saw a commercial last night for a razor. It's a razor, like a throwaway razor at that. And one of the lines in the commercial was, write your own rules. Why is that relevant to shaving? I don't get it. I think the rules are pretty clear about shaving. But that's the messaging that resonates. Be your own person, run your own life, be a god. We were made to be gods. The reality is that is a delusion. Because each of us actually, at the very basic level, follows our desires. And we didn't create our desires in whole. We are profoundly shaped by the people and the culture around us. And those have formed our desires. And our desires lead us, and we follow them. Do you know at the heart of original sin is this lie that we would be better off as gods? And that lie created in us a desire to take, to eat, to have that which God has not given us. But the irony, of course, in that is it feels like freedom and autonomy, but it's not. It's actually slavery. That move that they made in Genesis 3 for independence, to be gods, that move was made under the leadership of the serpent. We're made to follow. The question is who will we follow? That's what's so wonderful and powerful about the gospel. Jesus came not only to give us an example to follow, he put his spirit inside of us so that we want to follow him and that we can follow him. You see, when Jesus came on the scene, he said, come, follow me. And the assumption is that everyone's following something or someone. And the wonderful invitation is, yeah, but you can follow me. I'm better than all of that. This was very divisive when he said these kinds of things, when he makes these claims that we're looking at. You'll see at the end of John 10, if you want to skip down to verse 19 and 20, it says they're divided. They were divided over him. Some of them were saying, this man is insane. He has a demon. And then there were other people who were like, I don't know. I mean, he healed a guy. That doesn't seem very demon-like. I don't know. They're divided. Everywhere he goes, people are divided about him, and the questions are being asked, who is this guy? Is this a leader that we can trust? And Jesus is stepping forward in John 10 and saying, yes, I am the leader you can trust. Now, he says this in this word picture about sheep pens and shepherds, which is not super familiar to us. And so we're going to have to dive into this image today to see all of what he's getting at. The clearest part about this passage is verse 9, I think. So look at that real quick. John 10, verse 9. This is where we get his statement. He says, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasture. In our language, I would say it this way. Jesus is God's appointed leader, and all who follow him are saved and satisfied. Saved and satisfied. That's what we get under his leadership. So let's develop this by asking three questions. Let's ask, why should we follow Jesus? How do we follow Jesus? And what happens when we follow him? All right, first question, why Jesus? Why should we follow him? The short answer, as I've said, is that because he's God's appointed leader. He's the rightful leader of God's people. That's the main point of this little parable that he tells in the first five verses. Let's look at that again together. Look at verse 1 of John 10. He says, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the gatekeeper opens. Okay, so he's talking about a sheep pen, which would be like this walled enclosure made of maybe stones or fences of some kind. But there's one little opening in the wall for the sheep to get in and out. And that's the one legitimate way in and out. That's the door. And in the door, the gatekeeper stands there. He recognizes the rightful owners and shepherds of the sheep. And so he lets them in to get their flocks and to take them out. Anyone who tries to get in some other way, some illegitimate way, through the cracks or over the walls, those are thieves and robbers. They're not supposed to be with the sheep. They're a threat to the sheep. Now, there's also the response of the sheep to these two leaders, the shepherds and the thieves. Verse 3. The sheep hear the shepherd's voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. So the image of the door is about distinguishing between true and false shepherds, shepherds and thieves, good and bad leaders. And in this parable, Jesus is the rightful leader, and the thieves and the robbers are the Pharisees. And the reason I say that is because this parable, and really all of chapter 10, is a commentary on what had just happened in John 9. And we haven't looked at that, but I'll just give you a brief summary so you can see where this is all coming from. In John 9, Jesus heals this blind man, and there's this whole circus of trial around this guy, you know, between his neighbors and his family, and then he's brought before the Pharisees, and everybody's trying to figure out who this guy is and what happened to him and who's responsible for this. And of course, it's plain all along as the reader. It's like, well, it's pretty simple. Jesus healed the guy. And that's what the guy keeps saying. So the blind man in John 9 is representative of the sheep in this parable. And so we're supposed to evaluate in John 9, okay, how do the leaders treat this sheep? Well, it says that Jesus was passing by him and noticed him and turned to him. That's huge. How many times have you passed by beggars on the streets of Austin and not turned, not noticed, turned away even? That's what this guy's used to. Jesus notices him, and so he not only heals the man physically, he restores to him the whole sense of dignity and worth as a human being and restores him to community. It's a very holistic healing. When the man was brought before the Pharisees, they don't know who he is. They don't recognize him. I think it's likely that they have passed him many, many times because he's outside the temple and he's been there for many, many years. But it appears that never once have they turned a compassionate eye. They don't know who he is or where he came from. The man testifies over and over that Jesus healed him, but the Pharisees say to the man, well, whatever happened, this Jesus can't be from God because he did this on the Sabbath day. You see, the Pharisees had rules about the Sabbath. Now, here's what's crazy about this. The Sabbath was given to us as a means of rest, as a means of reflecting on God's works and of worshiping him. But the Pharisees are so caught up in their rules about the Sabbath that they don't see the works of God on display right before them in the healed man, who, by the way, is worshiping Jesus, the Son of God. They don't see it. Bad leaders are almost always preoccupied with justifying themselves, and they just miss it altogether because of that. They would not listen to the man's testimony. They kept interrogating him, pressuring him to denounce Jesus. And eventually, they didn't know what to do with him, and they just threw him out. They cast him out of the community to be exposed again. In contrast to that, Jesus, when he heard that the man had been cast out, he went to find him. You know, like a shepherd goes and finds his lost sheep. And when he finds him, he brings him in again, and the man ends up believing in Jesus and worshiping him. And then Jesus, at the end of the chapter, says a little word about the guilt of the Pharisees, a commentary on their bad leadership. And that flows right into chapter 10, right into this little parable about the sheep in the sheep pen. And so everything that's going on here is a commentary on that. When Jesus says that he's the door, he's talking about rightful access. First, he's saying, if you want access to the Father, then you have to come through me. I am your access to God. I am, as we saw last week, the way and the truth and the life, and nobody comes to the Father except through me. But he's also talking, I think, about access to God's people. The church has leaders. It did in that day, and it always has. Human leaders, which means they're not perfect. But there is a way to know if they're legitimate, if they're trustworthy. And the way that you know that is by their identification with Jesus, because he's the door. He's the way, the rightful way in and out. And so at the very least, it means leaders, spiritual Christian leaders, have a relationship with God through Jesus. They love him, they trust him, they worship him. At the end of John, we'll see this awesome episode with Peter, where Peter had failed badly, and Jesus is now restoring him to ministry, and he asks him these questions. And the first question is, Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yes. And then he gives him a command. Okay, feed my sheep. And he does that three times. And I want you to see that the order of that is important. The foundation of Peter's restored ministry is his restored relationship with Jesus. If you love me, then I'll let you shepherd my sheep. But if you don't love me, I'm not going to let you near the sheep. See, the danger for leaders in the church is that we would lead out of obligation, that we would just go through the motions, that anything would be our motivation other than our love for Christ. And I'll just be honest with you, I constantly need a renewing, a restoring of my love for Christ. It's not something that comes natural to me. I need him to ask me those questions all the time. The other mark of identification that leaders need to have with Christ is that their teaching is centered on him. When Christian teachers talk, they should be talking about Jesus a lot, to the point where you're like, yeah, I've heard that before. I hope that you think that, because that's our job. I think about the Apostle Paul, who taught a lot of things. The dude was smart, right? But then he also says things like, I decided when I was among you that I would know nothing except for Jesus Christ and him crucified. See, Paul says when he gets down to it, the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus is all we've got. If that didn't happen, if we don't proclaim that, then this is all in vain. And so Christian leaders are identified with Christ in their relationship and in their teaching. The danger for leaders, I think, is to stray from the centrality of the gospel, either because they feel the pressure, cultural pressure, to conform to something that's contrary to the gospel, or maybe because we just have some sort of agenda, personal hobby horse that we want to talk about as center when it's not center. Everyone's following something, And Jesus is inviting us to follow him because he's God's appointed leader. And the fruit of his leadership is seen in the testimony of the blind man. The blind man says, all right, look, I know one thing. I used to be blind, and now I can see. And Jesus did that. What a simple, wonderful testimony that we have. So how do we follow him? One of the key words in this parable is the word voice. Look at verse 3 again. The sheep hear the shepherd's voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And it goes on to say they don't know the voice of strangers. So the shepherd goes in, he gets his sheep, he leads them out through the gate, and when he gets out of the gate, out into the open, he doesn't drive them from behind. He goes in front of them, and he calls them, and he just walks ahead of them. And they follow him because they know his voice. There are all kinds of stories from around the world about this intimate relationship between sheep and their shepherd's voice. I was not aware of this. I read many of them this week. One account that I read was this man who, he was a guest in this camp where there were about 6 or 7 flocks being kept together overnight for safety. And he said the next day when it came time to lead the flocks out, the shepherds didn't go into the flocks and identify by marks or anything, kind of sort them all out. They didn't do that. What they did was they stood outside of the camp, and each shepherd, as they got outside of the camp, just began to issue their call. Now, these calls, sometimes they're just sounds that the shepherd makes. Sometimes they're words or phrases or a song. Sometimes I've read stories of people just play an instrument in a certain way. Whatever the call is, the astounding thing is that the sheep, their sheep, are so attuned to the specific, unique quality of that shepherd's call that they know who to follow. And so these 6 or 7 guys are standing outside the camp, each of them issuing some different call all at the same time. And the guy telling the story is it looked really chaotic at first. Everybody, all the sheep are they looked up. And they were moving around. But he said within about 5 minutes or so, every sheep had gathered to his shepherd, and there was not one unaccounted for. He said, I was totally blown away by that. And apparently, this is really common. This happens all the time, even today. And so Jesus is taking this really common image to them and saying, this is how you follow me. Get so attuned to my voice that you hear me above the clamor of all the other voices. Think for a minute about the voices in your life. Those things that just ring loud. It might be like a phrase that your parents used to say, good or bad. And you just got those tapes playing in your head all the time. Could be some cultural slogan, some marketing scheme that you thought was stupid, but somehow it's worked its way into your heart. And you're like, I do write my own rules. Yeah. That's how advertising works. It gets in you. Maybe it's peer pressure. That's a powerful voice. Some of us have these internal voices of fear and insecurity that speak to us and paralyze us with fear. There are so many really loud and persuasive voices coming at us all the time. How can we learn to hear the voice of Jesus above all of that? I think we learned 3 things from the sheep in this regard. The first one is this, familiarity. The sheep know the shepherd's voice because they're around him all the time. And you read stories about shepherds and they're always talking to their sheep and singing songs and they just hear his voice all the time. So they're familiar. The primary way that God has spoken to us is through his word, and his word testifies about Christ, whose voice we're trying to hear. And so the obvious application is that we need to get really familiar with God's word. I mean, read it, meditate on it, memorize it, sing it, listen to it, Write it on your mirrors. Whatever you do, whatever you've got to do, work it into your life in such a way that you just get so familiar with it that you know what his voice sounds like. The truth of God just rings loud in your mind. But then there's another thing. Familiarity is the foundation, but then there's a response. When the sheep hear the shepherd's call, whatever they're doing, their little heads perk up and they look. I mean, they're on alert and they run to him. They respond to his call. What it means to hear Jesus is not simply to be intellectually stimulated by what he says. It's to act on what he says. Jesus' little brother, James, warns us about this. He's like, listen, don't just be hearers of the word only, be doers of the word. If you're only a hearer of the word, you're deceiving yourselves. And the deception that James is talking about is this. It's along the lines of being the kind of person who thinks that just because I learned something, that it's part of me, that I'm following Jesus now because I know some stuff. And James is saying, no. You haven't followed Jesus until you've acted on what you know. Obedience to God's commands has a way of sharpening and clarifying his voice in our lives like almost nothing else. Here's the last thing. There's a knowing involved. The sheep know the shepherd's voice, but also the shepherd knows them. He calls them by name, it says. This is so great. God knows us intimately and individually. He knows your specific cries and desires and needs, and he knows how to speak to those things in very unique ways. Ways where you know, I think God is speaking to me. You know, when people say, God told me, or God, and I'm always like, I don't know. And when I try to share when God has spoken to me, it never sounds right. The other person's like, that doesn't sound like anything at all. Well, it sounds like something to me because it's very unique to me. He's spoken to me in a way that might not mean anything to anybody else. This happened today, actually. Small things. I know you think this is hokey, but I got to prayer late. So we pray at 3:30 in the parlor room over there. And I got there a little bit late. And right as I walked in, Austin Prentice was praying about people coming through the door. And he said the word door like two or three times. And I was like, okay, we're going to have a good day here. I felt Jesus telling me like, hey, listen, man, I'm the door. People are going to come through the door today. Is that hokey? I don't know. It spoke to me in a unique way. There have been a number of things like that. And prayer in general is a way that God speaks to us in unique ways. Have you ever prayed something and then somebody said the exact phrasing and wording of something that you had prayed privately? They could never have known that. And it just affirms and assures that God hears you and that he's acting for your good. I was today just thinking about all of the times that I've felt like God's speaking to me or known God speaking to people in these ways. And I was really overwhelmed by how much particular attention he pays to his sheep. This is so wonderful. You can be led by God. Like in a culture that is so volatile, so hostile, so uncertain, you can be led by an all-knowing, all-powerful God who wants good things for you. It's incredible. That gets us to our last question. What happens when we follow Jesus? Verse 9 tells us two good things that happen to us when we follow him. Look at that with me. Verse 9. Jesus says, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved. That's the first good thing. The sheep who enter through the door are saved. They're safe. They're secure. They're protected from the thieves and the predators outside the pen. There are some traditions that tell us that often shepherds would, you know, in the opening, in the wall, in the door, they would lie down, sleep in the door to protect the sheep, which may shed some light on how Jesus can say, I'm the door of the sheep and I'm the shepherd of the sheep, which he'll say, and we'll look at that next week. Because it seems that part of the function of the shepherd was to literally be the door in the pen. If you go back to the blind man in chapter 9, he had no such protection. No one laying down their life for him. He was rather exposed to all kinds of ridicule and neglect. He was helpless, like a sheep without a shepherd. And we are to see ourselves in his shoes. We are the needy, helpless sheep. We need to be saved. Isaiah says, we all, like sheep, have gone astray. And Peter picks up on that when he talks about the good news of the gospel. And he says, you were astray like sheep, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. You're safe. The full picture of salvation is that we have been saved from sin, death, and judgment. Just within the scope of this parable, though, the particular thing that we're saved from is the thieves and the robbers who we see in verse 9 and 10 came to steal and kill and destroy. And the thieves and the robbers here are primarily the Pharisees and their teaching. There's two basic kinds of thieves that I think we need to be on the lookout for. Many variations, but two basic types. One thief adds to Jesus, and another kind of thief takes away from Jesus. Adding to Jesus was the error of the Pharisees. What made their teaching so oppressive is that they just laid all these burdens on the people, all these religious rules and do's and don'ts that just nobody could bear. See, they thought that Israel was being judged because of their lack of holiness. And so they tried to produce holiness through the law. And not just the law that God had given them, but all kinds of additional laws. And it just became this system of injustice and oppression that just crushed the people. And Jesus was so furious about it because it was destroying his needy sheep. The other kind of error is taking away from Jesus. Many forms of this, I imagine, but maybe the most common form is to simply rebel against any kind of law. To say, I don't want any kind of rules. I don't want a God who imposes a moral standard on us. I don't want God to tell us that we're wrong or that we're broken in any way. I want to define what's good and bad for me. I want to write the rules of how I shave. See how silly that is? That's really common. And it takes away from Jesus because Jesus does have rules, does have standards. There are moral, ethical, good and bad things, and all of those boundaries are set up for our safety, for our protection, for our flourishing. The sense of autonomy we get from rebelling, from saying, I don't follow, I don't need rules and laws, it feels like freedom, but again, it is slavery to sin. In Genesis 3, when that lie got in them and they thought, yeah, we should be gods, it says that they saw that the tree was good for food and it was desirable to make one wise. And you can just see all of this rationalizing going on in their brains about how they should define what's good and bad for them. And they're like, yeah, our eyes will be opened. That will be good. And so they take and they eat that which God had not given them, and their eyes are open, but they are not free. Immediately, they are flooded with shame and guilt, and they run from God, and they turn on each other. It is not freedom. It is slavery to sin and death. See, this is what sin does. Sin lures you in by promising you to give you something you want. And then when it gives it to you, it uses that very thing against you to destroy you. The thief comes to steal and to kill and to destroy, Jesus says. Have either of these thieves made their ways over the walls in your life? Is there some area of your life where you are adding to what God has given us or taking away from the boundaries that he's clearly laid down for your good? You know, if the Spirit would bring any of that to mind, the worst thing you could do is to harden your heart against it. The best thing you could do is say, oh, Lord, I don't want to follow these thieves. They're stealing and robbing from me. I want to follow you. Because Jesus stands, arms wide open, to say, I'm the door. Come follow me. The invitation is open-ended. In the midst of these thieves, Jesus says, come, follow me, and you'll be saved. The second thing that he promises is in verse 9. He promises that we will be satisfied. Look at verse 9 again. He says, I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. It's a picture of satisfaction. Find pasture is an expression that means freedom in daily life. It means joy. It means the good life. And with all of the voices that are promising to lead us into the good life, Jesus is saying, no. I give life and life abundantly. The good life comes through me. Notice this little phrase that he uses in verse 9. He says, they will go in and out and find pasture. In and out is a Hebrew idiom for blessing and freedom. It also is a leadership theme in the Old Testament. And so it's in so many places, but one famous one is when Moses finally gets on the cusp of the promised land. He's led the people out of slavery and he's leading them into the promised land. God tells him, you're not going to go into the promised land because of your rebellion at Meribah. But so go look at it. I want you to see it. He says, you're not going to go in. And Moses doesn't whine about it. Moses prays. Moses says this. He says, okay, let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be as sheep that have no shepherd. And God appoints Joshua, which by the way means Jesus, just FYI. Jesus, in saying this, is saying, I'm the ultimate. I'm the one who's going to lead you out and bring you in. I'm the shepherd king that all of the Old Testament has been pointing to. Follow me. Israel is asking the question, who will lead us out? And who will bring us in? Who can we trust to lead us into the world with purpose and meaning and power and to bring us into and before the face of God so that we might seek him and worship him and not be conformed to the world? Who can do that? And Jesus is saying, I can. See, to follow Jesus is not to be taken out of the world. It's to be sent into the world with purpose and power and meaning. And then to be gathered back into places like this, where we seek the face of God and worship him so that we are renewed in our minds and our hearts and we are not conformed to that world. Only Jesus can do this. He brings us in. He sends us out. We do this every week. He brings us in. He sends us out. He brings us in. He sends us out. This is the ordinary rhythm of the Christian life. And you got to have both. You got to have hearing the word here and doing the word there. That's how you follow him. And as we do that, we will be satisfied. Satisfied. Some of you think Christianity is about just being saved. Like, well, just mail it in until heaven gets here. Heaven's here. The kingdom is at hand. Be satisfied in God. That's our witness in the world, that we're satisfied with him. And the way we maintain that witness is this rhythm of coming in and going out. Jesus offers you that. It's not really glorious in the sort of a, you know, sexy way. It's ordinary. I'll close with this. We meet with all of our members once a year because that's what shepherds do with their sheep. And we talk with them. And one of the questions on this little survey they get is, how have you personally applied the gospel this year? And one person wrote just a couple weeks ago, before I even started looking at this, she wrote this. She said, I'm learning to desire and seek God in the ordinary. And she was talking about a time where just recently where she had a lot of hardship, lost her job, all kinds of stuff going on. And there were these months of just like she was alone a lot and she was just reflecting a lot. And she admits in her response that that usually is a nightmare for her, like to just be alone by herself thinking. But she says, during this time, I was reminded so much of how the gospel is at work in my life and how Jesus has specifically been meeting my needs, providing me peace, patience, hope, and joy in all seasons. God offers me more than what my circumstances can provide. He offers me and everyone life in abundance and so much grace. See, she's heard the voice of the shepherd in the very ordinary stuff, coming in, going out, and she has found satisfaction in him. We have a way of making our lives so busy, so hurried, so cluttered, and part of the issue is that we are just being pulled by so many voices. And Jesus is just saying, listen, get to know me, hear my voice, come to me. Emily read Psalm 95 earlier, except she didn't read the last verse. Here it is. Verse 6 says, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he's our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. And then he says, today, it was true that day, it's true this day. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah. I would say, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. Come to him. Be saved. Be satisfied in him. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.